Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome back to Administrative Static and Happy New Year. Mark Chenoweth here with John Vecchione as usual. And we have a fun sort of reversal to report. I think Vec, maybe you remember better than I do. I think we covered this briefly, at least, on a segment here a month or so ago, that we were laughing a little bit because the New Civil Liberties Alliance has had a lawsuit going against the Department of Justice on behalf of our client, Dianthe Martinez Brooks, who is a 52-year-old nonviolent first-time offender who has been serving her federal prison term on home confinement since about March of 2020. She was one of those folks who the Bureau of Prisons decided was given the way that COVID was spreading in these congregate settings, she was someone who was identified as being potentially at risk and would be safer if put on home confinement. And Congress, one of the things it did in the 2020's CARES Act, the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, was to create the ability for some of these folks to remain at home during the course of the pandemic for their own safety. But we were laughing because we have this lawsuit going, and the Department of Justice filed a brief in November, and gosh, not a week after the department filed its
fighting
its brief.
It tooth and nail, fighting our position tooth and nail.
Oh my goodness, yes, telling us that that we have no business making this argument and whatnot. The Attorney General gets up in front of a committee on Capitol Hill and basically preaches the NCLA party line that they really need to look into this, and that there's probably something more they could do to ensure that these folks are allowed to stay in the homes for the rest of their sentences. And we sort of all laughed and said, well, maybe somebody in the Attorney General's office should tell the line litigators at the Department of Justice that the policy has changed over at the department, because that's not the tune that the lawyers we were up against were singing to the judge in our case. But in any event, things have since November come along, and apparently there was a Bureau of Prisons internal memo in early December, and then the Office of Legal Counsel at the Department of Justice, which is the sort of the lawyers in the department. They're the office that provides opinions on the constitutionality of various statutes and weighs in on how different laws should be interpreted. They have issued a new opinion. It looks like it was released on December 21st, that basically adopts NCLA's viewpoint of the CARES Act and agrees that prisoners who were released to home confinement pursuant to that law will not automatically have to return to prison after the pandemic, and will at least be eligible to remain at home instead. And that's all that NCLA has asked for in this lawsuit. We didn't say that, look, that the CARES Act says that you have to stay at home for the duration, but we just said, look, the Bureau of Prisons has discretion. Once the risk in the congregate settings has dissipated, if somebody is at home and they've shown that they're successfully integrating back into the community, it would be counterproductive to yank that person back into prison just because there's some time left on their sentence. If they were taken out of that environment for COVID reasons and were sent home for home confinement, and that's working, then it should be allowed to keep working. And at least the Bureau of Prisons should have the discretion. And we believe that under existing statutory authorities, and these include things that predate the CARES Act, that the Bureau of Prisons did have this discretion. And I was joking with John a little bit ahead of the segment that this is an unusual position for NCLA to be in. Usually we're up against these federal agencies that are claiming all sorts of statutory authority to do things that we don't think they have the authority to do, whether it's the SEC saying that it has the authority to pass these board diversity rules, or it's the CDC saying it has the authority to make emergency use authorization vaccines mandatory, or it's the CDC saying that they have the ability to do nationwide eviction moratoria. I mean, that's the sort of position we're usually in, is fighting against these attempts to exert power that administrative agencies don't have. So it was it's a little unusual to be in the position of fighting the Department of Justice and the Bureau of Prisons, where we're the ones saying, look, you have discretion in this situation. You may not want to admit it. You may want to pretend that Congress has tied your hands and that you have to send all these people back to jail, but that's not how we read the statute. And so that's a little bit of an odd position for you know, for us to be in. But I guess what I would say about that, Vec, is that what we want is for federal agencies to follow the law that Congress has passed. And if the statute says one thing, then if that gives some power to the agency, then they need to recognize that. And if it doesn't give power to the agency, they need to recognize that. We're not always in the position of saying, we don't always interpret every law through the lens of less power to government agencies. That's not our touchstone. Our touchstone is, what did Congress say? What did the people say? What did the people's representatives, who are accountable to the people, what did they say in the law? And then we want the federal agency to follow that, not to be frolicking and detouring on its own.
And they had this power, and they first said they didn't have the discretion. They have the discretion, and this new opinion says that. And, you know, once again, though, we pushed on them and they caved.
Yeah, we pushed, they caved. And it's this is another one of those non-victory victories, potentially, Vec, because, you know, whether it's mootness or you know, some other theory, whenever the government does a turnabout like this, they never go into court and say, you know, we lose. You know, you should decide for the other side. That's never the, and I don't want to go too far down this road because this one hasn't been tied up with a bow yet. But so far the government's position hasn't been NCLA, you win, and we want to pay all your costs for the lawsuit that you had to bring against us to make this happen. That has not been their approach so far.
to put it mildly.
Yeah, yeah. So. But look, the outcome here is a positive outcome, certainly for our client. And the Attorney General said that quote, those who have made rehabilitative progress and complied with the conditions of home confinement should be given an opportunity to continue transitioning back to society, not unnecessarily return to prison, unquote. And so, you know, that's what we were asking for. That's what the Attorney General and the new opinion from the Office of Legal Counsel allow. And so I'm pretty happy with this result. I don't think we have too much to complain about, other than DOJ should have capitulated when they first got our initial lawsuit, instead of dragging this thing out for months on end and saying one thing in the court of public opinion and another thing to our judge in this case.
And not talk about not knowing what the one hand, not knowing what the other hand is doing. It's an amazing example of that. But I do think that it's the proper interpretation of the law. And I think we got to hand it to Merrick Garland for telling the truth about this to Congress and then acting on it and not doubling back when they found out there was a problem with lawsuits.
Yeah, credit where credit's due in that regard. I agree with you on that. And speaking of credit where credit is due, let me pat NCLA on the back here for just a minute. I'm a little annoyed at the Politico and Washington Post and some of these other papers that have been reporting on this, because they're all giving credit to the ACLU and these groups on the left. And as far as I know, none of these groups sued over it. They might have weighed in with the White House or weighed in with the Department of Justice, but I don't see them out there representing folks and bringing a lawsuit against the department on this, that's been NCLA. And yet a lot of the reporting that's been done on this victory has left out the fact that NCLA is the one that has the pending lawsuit against the Department of Justice on this very question. So, and it's not like our case was marginally related to this topic or something. The particular relief that we asked for in our lawsuit was a declaratory judgment that the former Office of Legal Counsel opinion was wrong. So, you know, that's essentially the relief that the new Office of Legal Counsel opinion provides. But I think that NCLA deserves a great amount of credit for being the burr in the saddle here for the Department of Justice on this topic. And maybe yeah. I'll close, Vec, with a quote. This was in the press release that we issued in this case, you know, within the last week or two. But this was a quote from our client, Dianthe Martinez Brooks. We don't always put client quotes in the press releases, but this was one that we decided to, and I thought is a good one. And she said, "I'm ecstatic that AG Garland has stated, as we believed, that the Bureau of Prisons has the authority to keep individuals home beyond the COVID-19 emergency. For myself and the many others released during this pandemic, the fear of returning has plagued us all and hindered our ability to plan long-term. This is an awesome first step. However, given my experience with BOP, I respectfully ask the Department of Justice to oversee BOP as it develops the revised criteria for the individuals out on home confinement under the CARES Act to ensure the only basis on which an individual is sent back to prison would be if they seriously violate their terms of release. No one should be returned just because of how much time they have left on their sentence or any other similar factor," end quote. And so what she's saying there is one of the disputes here in the statute is it talks about being released on home confinement for the last 6 months of your sentence. And she's saying, look, if you have more than 6 months left, that shouldn't mean that you go back to prison. They should still do an individual assessment of whether, you know, where you are and how well you've been dealing with confinement and make a decision that way. I think that's a good point. And we'll end there and be back with more right after.
Welcome back. And so we've had some serious topics, but this is sort of a New Year's episode. And there is a Supreme Court story that we have from the National Law Journal by Tony Morrow. Tony Morrow has written about the Supreme Court, normally about its cases, for many, many years. And he's sort of semi-retired, but he's still writing various stories that are kind of human interest stories about the Supreme Court. And I read them all the time, and I find them fascinating. And I'm just going to report for our viewers that there is a Supreme Court eggnog that was a recipe that was kept by Harlan Fiske Stone, a justice from the 30s and 40s. And he was Tony Morrow says, an onophile. He was mainly a wine guy. But during New Year's, he had a New Year's eggnog that he made. And the folks at the Green Bag, which was a website where he got some of this information, did not know why this eggnog said Harry Parker eggnog by way of Chief Justice Harlan Fiske Stone. So it was a mystery. But I'm going to first tell you all out there so that you can, and on the podcast, you can listen to it again so you can get this. But it's real eggnog. It's not store-bought. And here are the ingredients. 12 eggs, 1 gallon of milk, ground nutmeg, 1 pound of sugar, 1 quart whiskey, 1/2 pint brandy, 1/8 pint rum. Directions, separate the egg yolks from the whites, cream yolks of eggs and sugar together, and add whiskey, brandy, and rum, beat well. Add milk, stir well. Add nutmeg to taste. Beat whites of eggs very light. Add the beaten whites of eggs and stir in well. Note, if put in a cold place, it will keep for 30 days. Never use all cream. Cream contains a large percentage of fat. If made all cream, the eggnog will become rancid. And finally, be sure to add whiskey, brandy, and rum before adding milk. So that's the recipe. And this has been used at the Supreme Court, but also the story has gone around quite a bit because they always asked, well, who's Harry Parker? And so Harlan Fiske Stone had this recipe. And many, many years later, 30 or 40 years later, the story pops up. And the
I think in 1998 in the green bag.
Yeah, is that when it was? Yeah,
yeah, so, I think so.
So maybe 50 years later, 60. I mean, it was a long time later, but Justice Rehnquist was still alive. And somehow it got to him. That's the other thing. I wonder if the clerks brought it to him. I can't imagine he was reading the green bag. Can you? I mean, maybe, but
maybe, you know. I don't know, but it was brand new. I think the green bag started in 97 or 98. So
online, wasn't it?
Would have been brand new. The green bag. Oh, it's a real publication. I've got some copies in my office.
Oh, okay. I was familiar with its online publication. I did not know it was hard copy, but anyway.
Most of them are famous for their Supreme Court bobblehead dolls.
So the green bag says, I don't know why it says Harry Parker. The law review was stumped because the recipe was attributed to someone named Harry Parker, whom, quote, we have not been able to identify, unquote. So then Chief Justice William Rehnquist wrote to the green bag to solve the mystery. Rehnquist identified Parker as a messenger for Justice Robert Jackson, for whom Rehnquist clerked in 52 and 53. Parker had been a messenger for Jackson for several years before that. And so he tells the story that when he was clerking, Parker was out. He had pneumonia and he was out. And so Rehnquist was going to go check on him.
And he was African-American, right?
That's why. And so what happened was, he said, I'm going to come over and see you, make sure you're all right. And he says, don't do that. White people simply did not come into black neighborhoods like this. And this is in D.C. in those days. I nonetheless drove out to his house, whereupon he opened his upstairs window and conveyed the same message in a gentle but determined way. So Rehnquist knew the fella, and this is evidently his eggnog is the eggnog that the Supreme Court uses. And I find this vignette pretty good. And I kind of thought that there might be a book about all these various holiday traditions at the Supreme Court, Mark, because we do. There's some other ones, right? I think under Rehnquist, didn't they have carols all the time?
Oh, is that right? I don't know.
Yeah, they have carols. Rehnquist would have people saying, and I guess some of the justices are less enthusiastic about singing than others of the justices is what I
well mean. I assume Scalia and Ginsburg, with their being fans of opera, they must have been sort of fans of carol. I mean, Ginsburg, I could imagine, obviously she was Jewish, but I could imagine her being a fan of the idea of caroling, even if not supportive of necessarily the message.
I believe that is exactly right. So in any event, so I think they have a number of these, and I've heard various clerks tell stories as well. But the eggnog story always tickled me. That's because it is really alcoholic. I mean, this is not a quart of whiskey, a half pint of brandy, and an eighth pint of rum in that amount of nog is not a small amount. I mean,
wasn't there a warning? Is there a warning in the recipe? Isn't there?
I think, oh yeah, hang on. I think I forgot about that.
I think
part.
You skipped that.
Oh
part.
Yeah, here's what it says. It's from Tony Morrow. As part of the public service of telling you this, I warn readers, it is a powerful eggnog. So do not plan to drive, write important briefs, or use heavy machinery after drinking it. And I guess the unimportant ones you can go ahead and take a flyer on them. Another tip. The recipe can be halved, and to avoid the risk of salmonella, using pasteurized eggs may be a good idea. Here it is in pounds in Stone's papers, and I've already told the listener how you can make it and where you can get it, and if we had show notes, we'd print it in show notes, but we don't have show notes.
That's right.
In any event, so that is the story of the Supreme Court eggnog. I think.
Well, I love eggnog and have loved it. Apparently, I'm told, since before I can remember, but I couldn't pronounce eggnog when I was a very young lad, and so I called it knick-knock. And so, you know, up until the time that my grandparents passed away, they would still remind me of the fact. Do you want some knick-knock, Mark? Like, yeah, I can say eggnog now, thanks. But now that I'm old enough to put bourbon in it, maybe I can pronounce it correctly.
That's right. That's well, for a little while. the other thing I like to do with it, and this time of year, I'm reminded of it. I forget until I get the eggnog, but I like to put it in coffee. So in the mornings, I have it in the coffee instead of cream, and I kind of like
that. Like bulletproof coffee? Because they talk about putting butter in coffee, right? That's supposed to be bulletproof.
No, I never
coffee.
Heard. I never heard
yeah.
that.
Yeah, well, maybe that could be your recipe next time.
Exactly. Well, let's see what else we have here. So I think that we're looking forward to the new year. I think we've got a lot on our plates.
Yeah, one thing that you'd said, John, that we needed to do was have more special guests. That you know, we've had some of our colleagues on the show, but we haven't done as much as we had sort of promised at the beginning of our first year when we set out the show. We said we were going to have some special guests on, and we haven't done that nearly as much as I think you would like to, or as I would like to. So I think that's our New Year's resolution, perhaps, for the show, is to have some more special guests from time to time. Any other New Year's resolutions?
I don't have any. I'm perfect.
For the show, not for you.
Oh.
if you need a few for you, come see me later. I could offer one or two. But,
exactly. I guess that's true. Perhaps I should. Did I say that out loud? In any event, well, I think that it would be good to have guests on to talk it. And I think also... We might survey more state administrative. I realize this is broadcast out of Colorado, and I don't think we did too much administrative law out of Colorado. Maybe there'll be some state stuff. I don't know.
Well, we do have a case that we're working on out of Colorado that we're not quite ready to talk about yet. But stay tuned, Coloradans. We have an interesting case.
I guess the RCAF stuff did affect Colorado quite a bit.
Oh yeah, and our Animas River case against the EPA—that's has Colorado impact as well. But you know, another thing we talked about early on was having sort of looking at—I started to say book reports, but that sounds really boring and high schoolish. But we talked about having a segment on new and interesting books relating to the Supreme Court, administrative law, et cetera, that we would have some authors on to talk with them. So I think that would be another thing that we could make as a New Year's resolution for the show. Try to do that occasionally.
That would be good. And a lot of people who write on that are known to us, right? I mean, I think of a lot of professors have put out some interesting book. Certainly Randy Barnett seems to every couple of years, right?
Yeah, I just got the original meaning of the 14th Amendment landed on my desk. That one's not Randy, but it's just out of reach, and my sight isn't good enough to see who the authors are on that.
Doesn't he have a forward in that or something?
Hold on, let me go check.
I think he does. I think
you are correct. It is Randy Barnett. Randy Barnett and Evan Burnick are the authors of this, and James Oakes is the forward. So
yeah, and so Evan is a very young. Professor, I don't want to overstate it. He's probably over 30 now, but when he is.
Yeah. When John says someone's very young, you always have to check.
Exactly. But he's very good on this stuff. And, I'm looking forward to that particular book. So we'll see if either one of them want to come in at some point, but that's what I'm saying. There's books like that our audience might want to hear about. And on the original meaning of the 14th Amendment, we could do a year of shows on that, because I think, as you know, that is a topic of conversation all over the place.
A lot of our cases touch on that.
So I wish all of our listeners a happy new year, and we will be back in it.
And if you try the eggnog, let us know how it turned out.